artist is expression. And, you know, what I see in your work are things such as clarity, geometrics, motorized parts, colors. You know, what would you say is your expression, or what did you seek to express, or what would you say about expression?
I'm never very good about knowing why I do those, you know, say those things. I always felt that what I was interested in was to give the viewer a momentary bit of pleasure. That's because most of the time people don't stop to look longer than a few minutes, and if you can mesmerize them a little bit longer with, like with these pieces that move and turn and so forth, I think when you're going to live with something, it's kind of wonderful to have something that's just that can absorb you a little bit longer. And I feel that actually paintings do too, but in drawings and so forth. I mean, that's one of the drawings up there, for example, and I don't think that one up there is mine. I don't feel that those are without expression. To me, when I was doing that, I was expressing movement, a dancer at rest, and so forth. Each thing had a different kind of expression to me. And I never really spend a lot of time thinking about why I do things. I mean, if I get an idea and I work on something, I sit up and futz around with it, and if it comes out, that's it. I mean, I get absorbed in things, and I don't really sit there and think about it afterwards. That's for the historians to do, I guess.
See, I see mostly all what I would call pleasant colors, as opposed to colors that are pleasant.
Well, that's probably true. I don't like art that's ugly. Like, I hate this kind of period where we've gotten into right now, where there's not we, but other artists who are doing things that are just totally disgusting to look at. Now, actually, though, they're doing something in their minds, which in the expression of showing the world as it is, that it's ugly. I leave that to others if they want to show it. I'm not saying it's bad art. I'm just saying that I have no interest in their expression. I've always been interested in up things, and that's why I think I love flowers and gardens and pleasant combinations of colors that please me. And I hate muddy colors. Like, I was sitting in that hospital the other day at the Presby, and there's a man who's almost dying, a friend of ours, and I'm looking, and there's this, the two of us, she and her brother's dying. I'm looking at this carpet, and it's this crummy shade of brown all over, and everything there is this ugly color. And I said, now why do people, do the decorators, do these stupid things, and this is what they give people to look at when they should have an upbeat atmosphere? But so, I mean, I'm not going to live with ugly things. So I guess that's why. That's why I think I have lilacs in my yard and purple flowers that I like, or I like all colors, but I just think that you have to have, you know, you want things that are pleasant to live with. But there are people that have been through, like, let's say Kiefer, who was a German artist who's been through the hells of war in Germany and whatever. I mean, their influence is an entirely different thing, and they're going to show in their art what has been totally, you know, unpleasant.
What does, am I right in thinking that there's a certain clarity to all your work? I mean, it's easy to see, it's clear, uncomplicated, in a sense.
Well,
maybe not.
It isn't. I don't know, when you say uncomplicated, I don't know. It may be uncomplicated for the final view, but it isn't uncomplicated
to make
and to produce. It's very complicated. And that's probably what my husband always said, Herb always said I should have been the engineer, because I am very interested in very complicated, very intricate things. I never learned to be an engineer, but I really probably would have enjoyed it.
I'm speaking of the final product, you know, that the forms are regular, clear, as opposed to zigzags and all kind of smearings and that
right.
sort of thing.
Yeah, dripping.
Yes.
Well, right, I agree with that. And the strange part about it is that I kind of grew up in the, I should say I grew up in the abstract expressionist period, but that was one of the very early influences in art, which I happened to love. And I loved Jackson Pollock and de Kooning and Franz Klein and people like that. But in my painting, even then, I didn't like drips and messes. I always was opposed to anything real messy in painting. Yet I could, and I don't consider that painting messy. I just consider it, that was a new form of expression. But I didn't try to follow, I mean, I wasn't interested in following what they did. I mean, mine evolved as me, and I guess it's kind of what came out of my personality or something, you know, out of my whatever influences. My father, you know, I told you my father died when I was just going on 16, and I guess I was 15. He died on. But he was a very, as a dentist, he was a very neat person, and he loved beautiful clothes, and he liked his, I don't know how to say it, I don't even remember exactly how, but he liked everything orderly, I'd say. My mother was also very, she liked everything put away, and everything has to be neat. But in our home, our house was bright and airy, and I think that helped to influence me to like these things, you know.
I think so. How do you view your accomplishments?
I don't know. You're there, that's all, whatever I did.
Very matter of fact.
There's nothing, you know, I mean, it's a talent I guess I was born with or was acquired as time went on and worked hard to develop. But I think I've worked hard to achieve a lot of these things. I had a lot of friends who went to art school and graduated from there, and they never did and went any further with it. I felt maybe I had to work harder because there were gaps in my training that I wished I'd had, and so I would read or study or take classes or whatever, wherever I could. And I don't feel that it's anything fantastic. It's just whatever it is.
What would you say are your successes?
In final achievements such as the sculpture downtown or whatever? Or, well, I think the fact that I was able to win that prize and to do the big sculpture, which you see now on Fort Duquesne Boulevard, the Inland Steel gave the money to provide the steel, or provided us with the steel, and the money was, Debbie Berkman was on the Three Rivers Arts Committee, where she was head of this committee, where she went around and got money, and for three of us to build these sculptures, and in addition we won this prize to do it. Now I found to get that done and have it a 21-foot sculpture erected in Pittsburgh, which I guess is thank God, some kind of a monument for me, I guess, for posterity, and to have it, people enjoy it. And it was originally at the City County Building, but they moved it because the portico there was sinking, and they had that building so old. But I was very happy to get it moved, although I loved it there visually because of the dome, and that's where it was planned for. And that ceiling is so exquisite, but since their architecture is a problem there, the Arts Committee decided to move it, and they asked me where, and I selected this spot, which I think is really exciting because it's right on the river, and it's right behind the convention center, and people go there and sit and enjoy themselves and have their lunch, and it's now called the Port Duquesne Park, I presume. And it's not a very big park, but it's that space. And I have it sitting against the skyline. I like think that's one big thing I enjoy. I enjoy the fact that Henry Hillman bought my work for Hillman Library. It was bought under the auspices of Carnegie Museum and Henry Hillman. I forget what the Carnegie involvement was, but at any rate, it's one of the things I find very exciting. I have one at General Mills, a very large sculpture there. I have another one at, I have one down in West Virginia that I'm very proud of in a fountain. It's another huge sculpture, steel. I have one in they're in DeBartolo's Mall in Melbourne. That one is a very large aluminum sculpture, and then there's a plexiglass one that is one of the biggest accomplishments, I think, to have that executed, because and Carol Siegel and Gallery G was the one who was my dealer during this time and had showed it to various, showed work of mine to various architects, the architects for DeBartolo, and they happened to like my work as well as some other Pittsburgh artists that she has placed there. And those are pretty big accomplishments. But I think my major accomplishments are my three children and my fact that I'm still married. It's going to be quite a few years.
Any failures?
Close to 1940 we got married, so that's quite a few years.
So, any failures?
I have failures all the time, but you try to cover those up, I guess. My studio is full of pieces that I like, perhaps, but never sold, if you call those failures. I don't necessarily consider them that. It's just that it's hard to sell sculpture. And because my sculpture, to do the work, is very expensive. The materials are expensive and all that sort of thing. So I can't find anything to cry about because there's no time.
How would you hope to be perceived?
How would I hope what?
To be seen, perceived.
Oh, I guess as a mother and a painter, sculptor, photographer.
Any advice?
To any young new people today, I guess it's probably a lot easier because there are zillions of shows today. I mean, you could enter shows from, you could spend all your time just doing nothing but entering shows between the festivals and things like that. A young artist can work and do and have sell their products without or their art or whatever. But I guess my major problem was that I really, really, really wished that I had gone to New York if there was anything I could have done, and spent more time there because, and had a studio there because Pittsburgh artists don't get to be known in New York well. And although I did get a lot of recognition in, internationally and so forth and in New York, but early on, but as time went on, I just didn't have the time or the energy to continue to going to New York constantly, and you have to keep showing your work, and you have to keep being involved in the art scene, and other artists have to see your work. So I guess if I were giving an artist who was really accomplished some advice, I guess it would be to try New York, because New York is really it. But nowadays, the substations, as they call them, Chicago and Los Angeles and San Francisco are becoming more much easier to work in today and to be get recognized. And the West Coast is becoming very exciting. And so it's a lot more diverse now than it was when I was trying to make a big name, I guess. But I really never thought of it as doing that, and it would have been nice, but you don't worry about this.
Any specific advice for women in art?
Well, there's much more of a movement again today. I mean, we now have a woman artist museum that started, and that's the first. I mean, it hasn't gotten great PR as being the great museum, but I think it's an exciting thing, and it's a beginning, and I have been one to support it because I think the women artists deserve a museum. I think that women just have to fight a lot harder to get in, and they're doing a lot of, see in New York, that's why I said if I'd been in New York, you go protest, you do all these things. Why are, the Whitney Museum didn't have one female artist in it or whatever, in shows. And it just goes on and on, but I guess there's going to be a long time before it's really going to make any difference. It's just like women are still second-class citizens, even in making money. They're the same equal job, a woman isn't going to make as much generally, but I think we're making progress.
Okay, Marcia, do you have anything?
Where is your studio now?
In Verona.
How do you work? In other words, do you every day go to the studio? How much time do you devote?
Well, I used to go, quite frequently. I mean, every day. But now I've gotten sort of involved in between the photography and also because it's so expensive to produce my art, my sculpture. I don't do the sculpture every single day. I try to keep working more on towards some of the photography shows and combining them with the sculpture. Because if I keep on producing sculpture, every time I produce a sculpture, it costs a fortune. I mean, I can't really do much of anything. I have without spending close to $1,000, so my expenditures get up and up and up, and so I try to keep, $1,000 doesn't even go a long way. And then when somebody comes along and sees a sculpture costs $4,000 or $5,000, they think it's too much money. They'll spend that on some of the women will spend $3,000 on a dress, but if you tell them a sculpture costs $5,000, they go, oh. So, things like that are difficult to overcome. Furniture comes first in many homes. They buy, spend a fortune on their furniture, and they'll never build around the art. Every once in a while, there's a smart decorator who comes in and does that, and they're the ones who, have been will be a big help to me in that sense. I like people to buy my art because they're collectors and like my work. Frederick Weissman, who is a big collector, who is not from Pittsburgh, but he's been on the Center, Pittsburgh Center for the Art board. He saw my work, and he went to one of my shows in New York and purchased it for his museum. He's out of L.A. He's doing his own museum now. When people like that buy my work, I'm excited. I don't know. It's just it's hard to keep working every single day. But what spurs me on is if I know I'm going to have a show. For example, I haven't really made any attempts to have shows for a good while. And I went to Florida after my foot operation. One of my friends insisted I go in and see a couple of dealers. And I had some work at a dealer that is a very, very well-known dealer down there, Camino Real. And I went in there and to get some of my work out of there that I had for a long time. And she saw the pictures of my new sculptures that are called Changing Boxes. And she said she'd like to have a show of those if we can possibly work out a time for next year. Now I'm really going to have to run to the studio very frequently to get moving on it. But a lot of my work has to be done with drawing a lot, you know, of the ideas, putting them down. So I don't really have to work every day. I have to get the whip out to get my assistant to work once in a while, though, too. And that, again, isn't always easy, but we do work. Well, once we get started, we usually work every day on a project. You know, I mean, I try to stick to a project until I get it completed. I think there are a lot of things that, have torn me away, and I guess that was the fire more than in the last 3 years. Just getting the things rebuilt that I want to do, the house, the sculptures, the pulling back files, everything had to be rebuilt. And you can't even find anything. I mean, you know, you start saying, oh my God, where was this file? So that's one of the problems with working again after being transplanted for a year and a half, you know, out of really a year, well, it's more than that, but a year out of the house and then another half year living with workmen it was 2 years before I got rid of all the workmen. And I still have them coming around, as you can see, the ceiling. Something goes wrong. But and then I decided, you know, it's even though I know I'm kind of probably too old to be involved in a house, everybody else says, why do you have a house? Why aren't you in an apartment? But I like the garden, I like the house. Irv loves the house. Our kids enjoy it when they come home. So why should I? But it's a lot of work, you know, you can't just, the weeds grow up otherwise.
You are actively involved in the gardening. Do you actually go out and do some?
Oh yeah, but I have a gardener who comes and takes care of it, but he's not a full-time gardener, you know, he doesn't just work for me every day. But he comes once a week, and in between you got to get out there and look at things and pull weeds, or if you want to transplant something, you do it. You have to mess around a little yourself.
Now tell me about your jewelry. I know that
Louisa Rosenthal, you know, did this garden.
Did Louisa do it?
She did the reshaping of it, and it's very, and we enjoy. You know, we they live down the street, and Herb and Louisa and I are very friendly, and we'll go one day. We'll go out to buying plants again. I mean, so I can't spend every single day at it, but I figure at my art, I figure this is important too. And the fact that I could give her some pleasure after her sad things have happened, I enjoy doing that for her because she's become, you know, more help I give her as a landscape designer, the better it is for her. So she was, that's why when that was in the paper, you know, she brought those people here,
yes.
And her name didn't get mentioned. I was furious. The Pat Lowry forgot the, or no.
Yes, I read about it.
I forget what it was. No, it wasn't Pat Lowry. Maybe it was. I don't know the woman's name. Didn't mention her name. But she's, but I got very involved in it. Like, I got friendly with a little man who grows iris. And when I went over to the Pittsburgh Center for the Art one day, and he liked me, so he invited me to come out to his home. And I bought some iris, very odd varieties of iris from him. And we became friendly. He's like, he must be close to 78 or 80 years old. He's adorable, and he's very sick. I mean, he's had heart not transplant, but everything else. But I go out there, and now for the last 2 years, and he gives me plants, and I buy stuff a little bit of here, but he gives me a ton of marvelous stuff. And I go visiting him, and he's way, way out. But it just, to me, it's fun to do that. And I have the woman who helped me redo the house, Helen Thompson. When I say redo the house, she did all the furniture refinishing. Now, Helen has lots of plants, and she comes in and she says to me, come on out to the house, I've got some great plants for you. So I go lug out there and transplant some more stuff. So that's how you develop a garden and it becomes sort of a living painting or a living sculpture to you.
That's nice.
So, and then, you know, the other day I was out there and I said to Tony, I want to move that sculpture over there. He said, oh, million blah blah, you can't hardly have it. It's heavy. I said, you move it. So the two of us, and we the two of us had dragged that heavy sculpture way over in the corner. But that's the kind of thing that's kind of fun is being a designer as well. I mean, you know, an interior designer and garden designer for me is fun. I like things looking very natural in the garden, not geometric, as opposed to my sculpture. That's why I said it's kind of a paradox in thinking how do you like these things. I don't know. It's hard to say. And when I'm photographing, I only think of a composition. I don't think of technical things that much. I think, you know, I have to think of technical things because otherwise the photograph would be lousy. But my first consideration is composing. If it's a garden, if it's a house, if it's a flower arrangement. I used to be involved in, you know, with the center and being a flower arranger. And we belonged to a garden club years ago, which has since disbanded. But I won a lot of first prizes in flower arranging because I guess my eye for form and line, it followed into that. So I think an artist can be really it can be a jack of all trades. But the trouble is you get diverted and you have to focus yourself. Okay, now this year I'm going to stop going into 14 different things. And that discipline is one of the most difficult things to do. So when you're doing over your house and things, you can't be building sculptures every single day, you know. So I guess that's what happens to me.
I would say that let's just use the tape so we can hear a little bit about the jewelry, which we really haven't touched on.
You know what?
You have 5 minutes? Less than?
Well, I'm supposed to be down there at 11:30. I don't have any makeup.
There's
on
a little time left on here.
Is there? All right, tell us about your jewelry, because that has not been...
Oh, made. Well, the jewelry was kind of an offshoot of the sculpture, as you probably know. I don't know, one day I was looking at belts and saw nothing that I particularly liked and decided to make my own necklaces and belts, and the belt part being the buckle that I was really mainly interested in. And it was there. I found that they were very, very expensive to do. They're not easy at all, and for what I was able to get for them at the time. Nowadays, people were paying $400 for a belt and not thinking twice about it. But I don't like to divert my time into it anymore. But I, in those days, if I got $150 for a belt, people thought I was, you know, I was insane. Well, the just to do one of those little things, I could be making a big sculpture and making, you know, or a little tiny sculpture like that that spins and moves and does all sorts of wonderful things. So I kind of laid low on them. I still like doing them. If I could, when I can get time, I once in a while. Right now, I'm trying to work with a silversmith. I did some work with another silversmith, but again, his work was to do the silver, to do it in sterling. But his work was wonderful and everything, but it was expensive, and nobody wanted to pay the price to have a belt made that was gorgeous like that. So I've kind of left it go. I found a new silversmith. It's taken me over a year. This young girl is adorable, but she's slow at getting things done. Like all of us, she's involved in everything. So one of these days, we're going to do a collaboration on this one necklace if it ever gets finished. And then if we do do it well, and then she can produce her part of it, then maybe we'll do a bunch of them. But it's too hard. The only way you can really do these things right, and I could have done it many years ago, producing them in New York, getting them manufactured.